The founders forgot that we had medical liberty.
We seem to be losing by taking the side of the middle. And we seem to constantly be losing.
I think Trump has made some kind of arrangements with Russia.
This person has made the allegations that they were a man.
If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There's no second best crypto asset.
Let's talk about science.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF, because in a time when everybody was attacking me, when Sargon doxed me and smeared me, you were the only one who gave me a platform, and you were very kind in helping me put the truth out there.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. How are you doing, people of the regular chat? Darko Malfoy had tried to send me a super chat. I didn't receive it, but it does seem like he sent it. So anyways, I've been asking him, what is the question? Whenever you have a technical issue, by the way, with super chats, just send me the question on Discord, put it on the regular chat. Generally, I answer questions, even if I cannot verify that the money came to me. So he says, anyway, could you answer this question? Have you also noticed 99% of Nick haters are over 40? Why is that? Is it age, bias, ageism? Absolutely, absolutely. The Nick haters are from another generation. There is a massive generational switch. You could say that it's the boomers versus the zoomers in the end. People like me are in between, and so some people like me, they more tend toward the Zoomer philosophy, the philosophy of the internet on this, whereas some people of my age are totally integrated into the institutional framework of the boomers. There definitely was a split, and I've seen it happen in my life. You know, I was in academia, and then I see the appearance of live streaming, and it's like, bro, we can reach hundreds of thousands of people. We can, even still as of today, even with my small shows, if I put a clip on Twitter, it gets 50k, 100k views. So it's like, we can reach all of these people instead of being trapped into an institutional controlled bureaucracy of academia. And I'm like, wow, this is how learning happens in the future. This is how I saw the internet arrive and the YouTubing and the availability of live streaming. I was like, okay, this is a change of the world. Now institutions will not be able to control all of this. Now, of course, the institutions have shown that they control a lot still, and they're able to make fake accounts, to make gatekeeping accounts. They're able to ban their competition through TOS violations, so they end up dominating a certain sub-niche of the internet. But all in all, you have a bunch of Zoomers, yes, that have basically accepted the internet revolution. They live in it. They're born in it. To them, institutional credentials, mainstream media, all of the stuff, the experts of the liberals, you know, all of this means nothing to them. If anything, it's maybe even a discount of your credibility. Like if you tell me, oh, well, I'm an expert at Harvard, I write at the New York Times. Those things are not received very well by Zoomers. Except, of course, the leftist Zoomers, the leftist sheep that follow, the beta males that have decided to follow the system. On the other hand, boomers are still operating in institution world, in a world that has not been decentralized. So I don't know. Darko Malfoy says, entropy, maybe shadow banning, JF super chats, sinister. I don't think Entropy would shadow ban. It must be a technical issue. Perhaps you ended up on one of my old Entropy-linked YouTube channels. And maybe on these accounts you sent the super chat. But the link in the description below leads to my current account, and I'm sure it's a technical issue, because I know the people of Entropy. They are very much they are into it. They wouldn't want to censor you at all. So forget about this. It's certainly not this. They are good people, and they have stood by people like Nick, me, forever. And it's their purpose. They have developed Entropy because they are alarmed at what's been happening with the internet. I mean, it's very sad. But the YouTube super chats have been totally taken over by censored, controlled opposition. Darko Malfoy says, most Zoomers are dumb, but it's even dumber to neg on a smart Zoomer. Yeah, I mean, I was also talking about this today in light of the behavior of the Brett Weinstein of this world, Richard Dawkins, you know, still not talking about the revolutionary phenotype. What do you think will happen? It's not going to go away. I'm going to be on the internet for the next 30 years complaining that you've not talked about it. You're going to die at some point. You're going to be replaced by other biologists. I'm going to complain about them not talking about the revolutionary phenotype until at some point this theory gets accepted as mainstream biology. Inevitable. Inevitable, my theory is correct. That's why they haven't come out to debunk it, because if it was easy to debunk, let me tell you, there would be a bunch of people willing to pay to see a full debunk of the theory of phenotypic revolutions. It's not happening because I'm right. And so confront the theory instead of staying trapped in your ivory towers under excuses of cancel culture and we don't want to engage because he said these other things. What a bunch of fucking... It's so sad. So sad to see a man not willing to live to the fullest. So sad to see a bunch of people say, well, it's too risky to talk about this because JF talks about these other things too. He said that about race. If you want to just talk about the theory of phenotypic revolution, you can do it. You can do it on your own terms. You don't even have to invite me. You can just isolate this subject and say, I'm not going to talk about the other subjects. It's like this constant faggotry of people. It's tiring. Because down the line, this gets accepted for sure. Down the line, there's no other path for biology than either to be wrong forever or to accept the theory of phenotypic revolution. Why would you want to take the wrong forever path? Why would you mislead people down this line? If you're truly fascinated, fascinated at knowledge and the discovery of truth. Blimpy Supervisor says, but JF not being a murderer and coming up with a new novel theory of biology triggers them too much. The thing is, they have to understand that this whole murderer coverage and this whole press about me, it's designed to keep me down. It's designed because the system has decided, no, we're going to wait for a Pajit to discover the next big scientific theory. But it's like, you're going to wait a long fucking time, okay? It's not like a Pajit will suddenly come up with a revolutionary physics theory. It's not happening. And it's not by denying white men's progresses that you're going to favor the progress of people who are incapable, fundamentally, of coming up with novel intelligent ideas. So yeah, these press smearings and cancel stuff, cancel article culture. They're all meant to give you a reason not to engage. And yes, Blimpy Supervisor, even plagiarizing can take a long time. Yeah, because try plagiarizing that. I mean, I've put my touch to it. It's hard to strip and express in other words in ways that would not be traceable back to it. I've put my touch precisely because I'm an original thinker, and it's kind of your job as an original thinker to make your thing uncopyable. Uncopyable? I don't know how to say that word, but not copyable. Millennial dads spend 3 times as much time with their kids compared to previous generations. That was my impression from my own life. I believe that millennials are in a particular position to see how bad the system was to be abandoning the education of your children to public school, to be subjecting them to liberal propaganda. This has totally undermined the boomer generation, because the boomer generation is precisely this generation that gave birth to kind of obligatory public schooling, kind of default option, the state will care for my family. And I'm happy to see that it comes out in the numbers. Millennial dads are spending a lot of time, and it's long to do schooling. You know, I'm through English and mathematics right now with my children. And it's a very long thing, you know, showing every single thing. From what numbers are to sum to subtraction and move on to the alphabet and words and meaning. You need to invest a lot of time. And in the end, in principle, we should have had a public service capable of delivering this. It's just that the public school couldn't help themselves. We gave them an inch and they took a foot. We gave them that much control, they took a little more. And they took over the moral upbringing of children in a liberal mindset, in a Marxist mindset. And that was the breakaway point. That was the point at which public schooling became punitive on creativity, punitive on whiteness, punitive on greatness, and became this kind of averaging out of the current brown state of the population. I was criticizing today the biologists of our world. I was thinking about Mendel. His work on peas unlocked the mysteries of sexual recombination and genetics, so he had sent a copy of his work to Darwin. Unfortunately, the copy that Darwin received was found unopened after Darwin's death. It's sad to consider that history may repeat itself. In 2018, I published a valid theory of the emergence of life, the theory of phenotypic revolutions, only to find our public speakers, like Richard Dawkins and Brett Weinstein, remaining completely silent about it. Perhaps it is like Darwin. Obsolete minds must be recycled in a compost pile through death before they are apt at grasping major advances in their own field. I find it sad. I wish Darwin understood Mendel. I wish Dawkins would know what his ideas have grandfathered. I wish that liberal political greed wouldn't get in the way of science communications. I mean, these people are still alive. They could still interact with the matured version of their theory. You know, the revolutionary phenotype is totally born out of Richard Dawkins' The Selfish Gene. You could say that the book is the child, the ideological child of The Selfish Gene. But no, they seem to be wanting very much to be headed toward death without interacting with the ID. Nick is right about women and how they hate men. And you'll see that women are capable of interacting with men, but never let this convince you that there's no hatred. Just because a woman is surrounded by men or is polite toward men doesn't mean that she doesn't hate maleness. And she hates maleness. She can hate maleness in the following way. It's that if you end up acting male around her, if you end up uncovering to her what it entails to be a man, to be a real man, like there are almost none left, you will see her hatred show up. So don't be fooled by the fact that they can be polite for a while. It's not about that. It's about, can you tolerate that there are cognitions out there that are completely different from your worldview? And in fact, their worldview is disgusting to you. And can you retain it in? Can you keep it in and accept, okay, I am faced with something different here. Something that operates on edginess, maybe on more instinct, conviction, self-drive, motivation, and that you ultimately will not respect the social rules that I think should be respected by anyone. That is how you respect maleness.
100% true that in society today, everybody hates men. They hate men for being men. And almost all women hate men. And I'm not saying that to be controversial. I'm not saying it to be hyperbolic. It is absolutely true. And this is how I came to this conclusion. A lot of women will say, well, I don't hate men. I say, I love men. I love men. And women will say that. Men will say that. But when I think of a real man, when I think of my favorite men, when I think of the men I look up to, the men I like to be around, the men that are role models, you think about people like your grandfather. You think about people that are tough, people that aren't politically correct, people that are mischievous and funny. They tell jokes that are edgy. You know, they're problematic. They're toxic. You think about guys like Donald Trump. What do we like about Donald Trump when we say he's a guy's guy? He talks a certain way about women. He is a little bit racist. He is a little bit narcissistic. He has an appetite. He does have these problematic ideas. Like, for example, he thinks that working out makes you die sooner because every individual has a finite amount of energy. He's a little superstitious, traditional, eccentric. And those are all the guys that women absolutely hate. They're rough around the edges. Uncle, Donald Trump, Andrew Tate, the prototypical John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, these types of guys. In other words, the men that they hate are the men that embody maleness. The men that women hate the most are the guys' guys. It's the guys that other...
Absolutely. So you end up with these liberal women, they want their little dog male. They want their little submissive beta male. But anything beyond this, they will call, yes, blimpy supervisor, assholes. So it's like, oh, well, I don't hate you because you're a male. I hate you because you're an asshole. Well, you have to understand that the other males that you tolerate aren't incarnations of maleness. They probably wouldn't have existed 400 years ago. They are merely, gender blurred betas, low testosterone males that can survive in the modern world because there's so much help and so much, I will do stuff for you. But they wouldn't survive on their own. And therefore, they are not the archetypical male. They are really products of modern society. Dino Raja sends $20. Thank you so much for the support. He says, Nick gave you quite a compliment on his last show. When JFG speaks, I sit on my white ass down and listen. That's interesting. Is it? I had seen, I believe,
I had watched JF's.
I had seen that compliment, but I didn't remember that those were the words that he was using. Let's have a look.
Stream dismantling Candace's claims against you. He did a very good job laying things out and pointing out how dishonest, low IQ, and suspicious Candace is. Also, what is your opinion of JF?
I love JF. I love his content. You know, for someone like myself, it's so rare that I actually sit my white ass down and listen to somebody, because most of the time I just can't do it because most people are not that smart. But JF is one of the few people that I actually will listen to because I think he's brilliant.
Richard Dawkins should listen to this here, this wisdom right here. Listen to JF. Sit your white ass down. A JF is speaking. You know how they say, a black woman is speaking. Learn and educate yourself. Well, JF is speaking, and Nick can't help but sit down and learn.
Brilliant. He's obviously super intelligent, very funny, and he always has an interesting take. So I'm a big fan of JF. Yeah. I've always liked him. We had a little feud for a while. It was so long ago, I don't even remember what it was about, but I really like JF. He's really funny.
I'm Jewish.
Oh, good time. This clip keeps making it back all the time. People remember those moments. I'm so happy to have contributed to the history of the internet. At some point, all of this will be lost, by the way. There's no one truly archiving. There are people who will archive, and they will keep these live streams alive for maybe 30 more years, but at some point, all of it will be forgotten, and we'll basically be faced with generations coming up and be like, who are you? Who are you, Jeff? Why do you think you're a big shot of the internet? It's interesting, this, how the history gets washed away and disappears. HB Cobra says you can still find them on BitChute. Oh yeah, you'll be able to find them still for many years, but there's less and less people who will know about it and who will search for it, and eventually it's just gonna go away. Darko Malfoy says the onus is on individual creators or super fans to download it all onto physical disk. Yeah, I have my hard drive of all of my shows, which perhaps maybe at some point I can do something like Nick Fuentes. Perhaps I can create a website. I don't know what's the name of his website, but he's now giving his archive up on the internet so that you can go and watch back any of his old videos. Mr. Beast on his way to quadruple the population of Eritrea because he's like a good freaking person or something. This is a visual representation of Mr. Beast and just how hard he goes at it when it comes down to multiplying African people. Yeah, I mean, it boils down to this. Charity, don't feed the ducks. Don't feed the ducks. It boils down to this. You are either neutral, you contribute to the birth of white people, or you contribute to the birth of black people. It's as simple as this. It's an equation, it's math. And if you go to give water, even for just a week, to a whole village, and even worse, if you do it for 100 times or 1,000 different villages, you are definitely contributing to a browning of the world. Simple as, and it's really too bad. It's really too bad that it's that simple. But Eventually, even if Africa itself is capable of absorbing some degree of overpopulation, at some point, there's too many black people, they fight for your well, and the people who lose the fight, they run away. And where do you think they go? They go to Canada, and they go to the US, and they go to Europe. So no matter the mechanism through which you pass, it's always world domination, and it's always with baby production. And each baby you save is a plus in the big mathematics of the world. Darko Malfoy says, is Bill Gates secretly based because he's handing out the clutch shot en masse to Africans? I mean, within the black culture, there is something like this that goes, a theory. It's like the idea that they were played on by the white male, that all of these charitable efforts were actually experiments meant to diminish the black population. So, of course, it's a paranoid view of the world. With some degree of support at times, historically, you know, there are some vaccination campaigns that you look at, you know, almost a century ago, and and you wonder to what extent that helped, and probably to what extent it didn't help. But yeah, it doesn't matter if it's paranoid, because it serves its purpose. It leads black people to be anti-system, leads them to be pro-natalist, and leads them to be doubtful of the white man, because they think, oh, maybe the white man wants me to abort the babies, or maybe he wants to commit an anti-black genocide. Homat says, I used to drive for Uber in a big blue city. Once or twice a month, I would pick up an Indian woman who would tell me that she wanted to get rid of both racism and Pakistan. Everyone is conservative about their own country and liberal about everyone else's. Except white liberals. You're the only idiots who thought that people changed. You are doing, let's share. And they are doing me first. That means you lose. And that doesn't bother me so much. But it also means I lose, because you and me were the same thing once. So your foolishness gave away all of my stuff, and now I have to move to South Dakota and learn to farm my own food if I don't want to be told what to do by 100 million people who got here yesterday and look at me as a conquered slave. Even criminal courts take their side by default now, and everyone knows it. Great job, guys. You proved how much love and empathy you have for everyone but me. Cool. Yeah, I would say Omat is interesting because he's developing into a critique of race and everything. But he does so, see, but he doesn't follow me on Twitter. And it's like, does he realize that we've made all of these points before? Does he realize that there was a past awakening that led to his own red pilling? Because Omat started as mostly dating commentary at first, and now he's being awakened toward the realities of race. Good job, but it's 2025, and, you know, I would appreciate some sign that this guy isn't an agent that is there to deny the existence of those who actually helped push these ideas forward. I doubt very seriously whether anyone will hire me. What do you mean, babe? You're a fine boy with a good education. Employers sense in me a denial of their values. They fear me. I suspect that they can see I am forced to function in a century that I loathe. This was true even when I worked for the New Orleans Public Library. A statement by John Kennedy Toole. Okay, I didn't know about this. Very interesting. Yeah, we have people asking, why are there plexiglasses protecting the employees in a fast food. Well, it's for this kind of situation.
I don't give a fuck. Ain't nobody eating shit around this bitch. You think I'm playing with y'all? I ain't playing. I don't give a fuck. Fuck this nigga order too. Fuck him and his order. Fuck that, bitch. You heard me? Budo, bitch. Budo, bitch. You heard me? Fuck you. Fuck all y'all. Get my shit together. I don't give a fuck. My bad. Fuck him.
It's impossible to function corporate-wise, make profit, if you're dealing with a basically apsychiatric population in open sky.
I'm late with this, but the beauty and the tragedy of evolution, it creates men motivated to create groundbreaking ideas, but also gatekeep the extrapolation of those ideas if it means lending credence to thinkers who threaten their ideological monopoly.
Absolutely. Let me reread visually.
I'm late with this, but the beauty and the tragedy of evolution, it creates men motivated to create groundbreaking ideas, but also gatekeep the extrapolation of those ideas if it means lending credence to thinkers who threaten their ideological monopoly.
Yeah, and it's so sad because what you describe is the standard in academic science. You have people, they come up with their little revolution, okay? It's very small, nothing like the revolutionary phenotype, okay? But they come with their little incremental addition to science, and somehow they swirl their way through the social networks needed to convince someone to eventually hire them as a professor. And then they consider that this is their scientific legacy. And they hang on to it, like, in a way that is simply not justified. I wish we were in a world where intellectuals are incentivized and they are selected for openness. Openness to being wrong, openness to maybe your ideological contribution will not survive. So what? If whatever comes after, if it's better, it's better. Accept it. I don't know what kind of mentality these people must be in to be hanging on to their little scientific crap. Like, I think, for example, of my own papers, you know, in big, big journals, the biggest journals of my field, Proceedings of the National Academy of Science, PhD paper, Nature Neuroscience paper during my postdoc. Those are the biggest publications. Like, I could hang to these and be like, oh, this is my contribution to science. And if I see a young scientist come up and prove me wrong in some way, I'm going to go after him. I don't get it because I don't feel that kind of pride for these little incremental contributions to science. Someone could come up and, I don't know, prove me wrong on what I demonstrated in my PhD thesis. You know how much impact that would have on me? Zero. Because those are such small incremental advances that at some point you have to think there is something bigger, there is something much more pleasant in the discovery of science and the novelty of it and the great ideas that end up completely smashing old ones that weren't appropriate. This is so much more interesting than my little ideological legacy. And yet, what you describe, this is a problem. People, they gain power in the system of academia, and then they gatekeep. Because that's all you can do, really. You can just be an ass during the peer review process so that the next generation has more difficulty contributing to science than you did. And this system is totally obsolete. It must be completely abolished. The anonymousness of it, absolutely dangerous, because you end up having ethnic preferences show up. So now you have a Jewish editor, he sees a Jewish lab proposing this article. If he passes to a bunch of Jewish professors as peer review, poof, you're going to get positive review. Or you pass to non-Jewish people, you're going to get negative review, and vice versa. So just the little choices along the way, they all predetermine the outcome, and it's never about science anymore. The current peer review system, it's all about who is doing it, and it's about who is reviewing it. And I knew if an article was to spend 1 year in peer review only to be rejected at the end, or if it was going to pass like this. And it was all about who is the editor, who is the peer review professor. And as long as you leave it be anonymous, you let all of these ethnic preferences develop in the system, and you end up with 80% Jewish professors in a department, and it's like, whoa, what the fuck happened here? Well, I'll tell you what happened. You made the process of selection of science anonymous. And there are people who act honorably when they are in the dark, and there are people who act less honorably the more they are in the dark. Okay? That is as simple as this. You have people who have some kind of a conscience, and they try to adhere to some standard. They try to hold themselves up to some standard. And then there are other people, as long as you turn off the light and they know that they're not being watched, they don't care anymore. They go ham. And those people are called Jews. New Guy Prime says, people do not act honorably. Blimpy Supervisor says, Michelin star restaurants tend to be in cities with Michelin tire factories. Oh, man. It's like, oh man, you made me laugh. Because your sentence is very special. Because it's one of those sentences where I'm sure it's probably true. And yet it sounds like a mere metaphor. It sounds like the Michelin tire is something else, and that you are talking about something else, that you're using the euphemism of Michelin tires to talk about something else. But at the same time, I'm also convinced that you are correct. It makes sense. Marjorie Taylor Greene says, I strongly support President Trump ending mail-in voting. So President Trump is starting a movement to get rid of mail-in ballots. And also, while we're at it, highly inaccurate, very expensive, and seriously controversial voting machines, which cost 10 times more than accurate and sophisticated watermark paper. Oh yeah, I've been rooting for this for a long time. It's mockable the way the US works. The Canadian system is just perfect, and it all relies on literally just stickers, papers, and cardboard. But you can arrange sticker, paper, and cardboard to be so traceable, you have no idea. You can have a lot of confidence in the Canadian system because they have a cardboard box, and everyone knows the number of the box they put their vote in. And all of the little papers, when you slip it in, there's a little detachable part that is kept as a receipt by the verifier. So everything is traceable. They are able to trace how many people physically put a little piece of paper in that cardboard box. They're able to have verifiers from all the parties at all time. They can have their eyes on the box. So the box isn't hidden. So they take the Conservative Party, the Liberal Party, they say, send me one of your guys. And the guy can stay all day in the voting location just to look at the box, just to make sure that no one is messing with it. And there's a system of stickers that make it so that if the box gets opened, it will leave a trace. So the box never gets opened until the count. And the count itself is made in the presence of all of the of representatives sent by each of the parties. So it's a sealed system. Now, instead of this, we have Democrat cities running operations where they count for themselves, and it's not clear to me that there are observers from all parties that are present at all times. Sometimes on the cameras, it seems like bureaucrats have some kind of privilege, backway access to these mail-in voting ballots. And we've seen what the Democrats do anyways on stuff like Project Veritas. They go into a 60 IQ black man's apartment and they're like, "Hello, sir! It's time to vote against Trump! You told me you wanted to vote against Trump, right?" "All right, here's how we vote against Trump. Let me align the paper to your moving pen." I mean, you can solve this very simply by putting a, you have to get to a voting location. Being at a voting location resolves so much because you're not so retarded that you can't transport yourself. You're not so retarded that you basically cannot write or appear unable to write. Other people can verify while you vote that there's no pressure being made onto you. For all of these reasons, mail-in voting should never have existed. It is a denial of the valid votes of those people who go in and make a physical demonstration of their truthfulness. The vote from mail-in voting is not as demonstrable to be fair as the vote in person. H. Cobra says, "Jeff, I watched your debate against the flat earth guy the other day. Was laughing my ass off when you asked him about horseshoe theory." Okay. I don't remember in what context I have asked this. Darko Malfoy says, "It's racist to expect black people to have normal abilities such as have ID to vote or have a parent to being at Chick-fil-A." Yeah, we learned today that Chick-fil-A has made a rule against unaccompanied teenagers. That sounds like a rule against black teenagers. Because unaccompanied teenagers, I can totally imagine it was a bunch of problematic teenagers that were spending more time than they should in the restaurant, perhaps making noise, yelling, disrupting the experience for other diners. And so at this point, they are requiring chaperones. So teenage customers must be accompanied by adults. I think it's a good idea. And as I indicated on my Twitter, it probably bars effectively a lot of black teens because they don't have parents willing to go with them at Chick-fil-A. They will answer, "Hell nah! Hell nah, I'm not going with you at Chick-fil-A!" So they will find themselves on the streets instead. Coronel Mass Ejection says they're changing the bell curve to accommodate the brown IQs. Changing the bell curves how? But yeah, I mean, there is a point at which we will get pulled by the demographic reality toward the bottom. I mean, the Flint effect is already over, so IQs are not rising since the 80s, and it's pretty clear what's happening. We are diversifying America, but we're diversifying it with lower IQs. So these, even if you get a first generation of immigrants in that are slightly higher IQ because they passed the immigration form test, like, are you so retarded that you can't fill an immigration form? So they're slightly higher IQ, the Indians that are coming in. But it's a matter of generation. It's a matter of one generation before their natural IQ comes back toward the middle, because this selection is probably not going to be rewarded by any sort of natural selection, because somehow non-intelligent people make it well in our world, and intelligence isn't so much of an advantage. If anything, it's a disadvantage on the number of baby you will produce. So let natural selection happen, and they will be back to their country's original 85 IQ within no time. Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu is lying, claiming that his executive director of Israel National Cyber Directorate, Tom Alexandrovich, was not arrested. So there's this guy. He gets arrested in a Las Vegas Metro Police Department investigation. they catch something like 6-7 people, all involved in child sex predation. So very heavy stuff. They all get imprisoned, but somehow Tom Alexandrovich has enough time to leave the court, not have a court date set, and then he flees to Israel. And that's what people are reporting, even Sean King. Tom does not have a court date. In fact, he's the only person arrested for sex crimes that day that was not given one. Check the docket out for yourself. This tweet is false, because the U.S. State Department was saying, oh, we didn't help this guy go to Israel. Well, whether you helped him or not, you you let a moment for him to be able to flee. You didn't imprison him in a permanent way, and he was a flight risk, and now he has flown out. So we're stuck with... Israel really thinks that they are above the law, and they are truly in our country temporarily. They are living here sometimes for a long time, but if it gets troublesome, they want out, and they want out quick, and they believe that it's their right. Daycare worker in Georgia, the exact reason why you don't send your child even once to daycare. The daycare is forced to have diversity employees, or they just go for black employees because it's cheaper. The black employees loses their cool because they hate white people. They've been educated to hate them, and perhaps the white child triggers something in them. First day at the daycare, this young boy gets attacked, aggravated battery, 3 counts of first-degree child abuse by Yvette Thurston, 54. So they use children, white children, because it's a victimizable group that allows them to enact their anti-whiteness. New York writer who referred to Sydney Sweeney as Aryan Princess deletes a series of racist exposed. I hate white men, she was saying. Another, Doreen St. Felix, 33, a writer for The New Yorker. And no problem if she had racist exposed. When it's racist against whites, they tolerate it and you're still getting employed. End of the line, Joel says, I wonder what the child said to offend her. Possibly nothing. I mean, we've seen just black people be totally enraged by whiteness or success. We've seen like just a beautiful blonde woman will attract hatred. Like, you can see it in the eyes of black people that walk around her. Like, who does she think she is? Absolutely disgusting scene of what I've been talking about, which is that immigration is a biohazard. At some point, it's not even whether they want to kill you. It's that they will kill you. They will kill you out of their carelessness, recklessness, incompetence. And this is alarming for Canada too, because this happened to have happened in the US. But I see so much of these truck drivers with these turbans in Canada. It seems that the entire trucking industry has been taken over by Indians. And this guy led to the death of three Americans, and he was an illegal. He was given his driver's license by California. So we have to start talking about denying California, denying reciprocity to California, and start saying, hey, if you have a driver's license or a truck's license coming from California, it's not valid because they've been giving it to illegals. So the guy tried to make an illegal U-turn using a passageway that was reserved for emergency personnel. As a result, took the whole highway sideways with his truck, put his truck basically at park in the whole highway without any sort of warning to the people behind him. So people are rolling at 100 kilometers an hour or 60 miles per hour. They can't stop suddenly. So you have a whole family of three that has died as a result of his turn. The American Punjabi driver, a massive risk to society, because here you have an illegal that doesn't care about the law, that hasn't passed all of the requirement or test of immigration, so he may not even be higher IQ than his original population. And he is careless about life because he comes from India. And in India, there is such overpopulation that you kill three people, there are more born on that second than the number you killed. So they don't value life at the same rate as we do. Lord of Sigma says, literally, these Indian truckers that buy a truck between them, cut a hole in the floor and shit out of the truck. I've heard it from workshops that refuse to work or inspect their trucks due to this filth. Twitter conversation around this accident, there is a thousand different stories of truckers are alarmed at the state of the economics of this. They see that their jobs are taken. These Indian drivers are not respecting the rules because there are rules for truckers. They can only do that many hours and then they have to sleep. But if the trucker decides, hey, I'm pairing myself two Indians instead of one, so we never stop driving and we're cheating on the hours so we can drive more than the white man, they end up breaking the rules, but they end up killing people in the process. So a lot of reports of disgusting things, of the way they take care of their trucks, of the fact that truckers in the last few decades have seen the gas stations completely changed. They used to be clean areas. There used to be specialized areas for truckers to even go take a shower. And now they can't take their shower anymore because there's shit all over the walls. They are shitting over the walls and making these places unviable for white people. Rick Verger says, Jeff, it's also the fatalist belief that Indians have. They believe people will have died anyway, so they have no responsibility for causing it. I mean, it's life is cheap in India. That's one of the problem. In these poor areas, life is cheap. And so considerations for the sanctity of life don't exist. And yet they have other things that they sanctify, apparently, like cows. Maybe if he had killed a cow in his U-turn, he would be sensitive to this, but they have no sensitivity to human life, human families. They just act recklessly. And they don't have an understanding of entropy and the fact that if you've accumulated 60 miles per hour of speed, that is a very long thing to stop. It takes a lot of time to stop, but they can't process the math and the physics of it. Rodilacid says, the Indians' main predator is the speeding train. Well, is the Indian, is it because the Indian gets shaken off from hanging on the side of the train? Yeah, there is a speed at which, there is a speed at which the Indian just drops off. The Indian can't hang in anymore. Breaking, Kremlin declares it will not accept the presence of Western troops on Ukrainian soil. So that, we're back to square one. Square zero. We're back to the beginning. Trump is like, we're going to make some security guarantees, but I've always been saying. Zelensky means by security guarantee something that is so much broader. He means either soldier presence on the territory or a form of NATO membership that they may call not NATO membership, but that will be effectively making Ukraine a member of NATO, which is what in the first place has triggered these wars and has triggered this conflict. So it's like Trump today spent the day speaking with European leaders and Zelensky, and I'm optimistic. But in the end, Putin doesn't want Ukraine to be a Western puppet. Putin doesn't want Ukraine to have Western soldiers. Putin doesn't want Ukraine to be effectively integrated to the Europeans and their military alliance. So it's like you can reframe it and reformulate and rename it all security guarantees or whatever. It's not what we're talking about. We're talking about the domination of Ukrainian society by Western interest.
The Alaska summit reinforced my belief that while difficult, peace is within reach, and I believe that in a very significant step, President Putin agreed that Russia would accept security guarantees for Ukraine, and this is one of the key points that we need to consider, and we're going to be considering that at the table also, like who will do what, essentially. I'm optimistic that collectively we can reach an agreement that would deter any future aggression against Ukraine, and I actually think there won't be. I think that's even overrated, largely overrated, but we're going to find out. And I
see Trump knows what's up. He knows that the Zelensky and the Zelensky fear of, oh, they're going to go further, they're going to take more, are unjustified. That's what he just said. But if they are unjustified, then if Zelensky is being paranoid, then what? Then we have to tell Zelensky, your security guarantees will be very minimal. It will be basically a side of the table deal where some country will say, we are protecting Ukraine. We are protecting the general idea of Russian incursions into Ukraine, and we will back you if that happens.
I think that the European nations are going to take a lot of the burden. We're going to help them, and we're going to make it very secure. We also need to discuss the possible exchanges of territory, taking into consideration the current line of contact. That means the war zone, the war lines that are pretty obvious, very sad, actually, to look at them, and negotiating positions. President Putin also, you have President of Ukraine, who is you just met a little while ago, and we're going to try and get a three-party meeting, maybe as soon as we can.
All right, so we're still into meetings, and I don't see it develop into a realistic solution, simply because Putin says, oh, well, maybe I'm open to security guarantees. What does it mean? Now, Trump comes back and it's like, oh, well, it means soldiers. Well, I don't want soldiers on Ukrainian ground. Then what is it going to be? Rodi Lacid says, well, if Ukraine keeps pushing to be in NATO, and if the EU keep talking about how it will be integrated, then there is zero incentive for Russia to stop until it takes it over completely. Exactly. It's very clear the hand of Ukraine has been revealed. They want to beg and beg and beg until NATO gets them in. But as long as they're therefore not in NATO, and they can't enter NATO as a country at war, by the way, they cannot enter NATO. So right now, the situation is pleasant to be in for Putin, because it's like, oh, well, I could advance a little bit and get a little bit more territory. But if there's a deal, then Ukraine is suddenly a country at peace. And they, if the deal doesn't specify that they can't enter NATO, they will. Or they might. U.S. Attorney Janine Pirro has described the story of a woman who traveled from New York to D.C. So I said on the thumbnail that it was a New York woman. Actually, she just spent a little bit in New York, but she's originally from Indiana. So she's in Indiana, and she's a fucking boomer. So she makes her death threat to the president on Facebook, of course. It's like... she makes her project of going to handle the president, working to have Trump eliminated. She posts this on Facebook. And she then goes on a road trip. I won't show her house, but since her address was present in some legal papers, I've looked at her house. Just a very small house, like you would expect a crazy woman to live there. So she's like, I'm gonna go work to have Trump eliminated on Facebook. She drives to New York, then drives to Washington, D.C. She was now in Washington, D.C., and that's where they caught her. She's facing two federal charges for knowingly and willfully threatening to take the life of the president. That is the current situation of these charges. And weirdly, Grok started by denying that the video was real of Janine Pirro, U.S. Attorney General. Grok stated, Natalie Rose Jones is the name cited in a viral fabricated video claiming she was arrested for threatening to assassinate President Trump. No credible sources, including DOJ or major news outlet, confirmed the arrest or her identity. It appears to be misinformation. So Grok, that's fascinating. Grok has difficulty moving into the new web where Janine Pirro posts a video, and it's an official video because it's Janine Pirro. Grok is waiting for these mainstream media confirmations, and it's not finding them. And so it declares the video a hoax, declares it a fabricated AI-produced video, and yet it's a real video. That is a sign that Grok is still programmed too much to rely on the mainstream. Because, of course, if it's a news that is purporting the assassination of President Trump, it's only going to attract initially these right-wing outlets, these right-wing broadcasting network, that kind of stuff. And somehow it triggered Grok to think that it was fake because of it. Well, it's not fake. It's just that it's something that the mainstream media does not like to report on. An English woman wants to legislate trains because she was on a train and it felt like it was going too fast. You can't make this shit up. The train I'm on is going alarmingly fast. It's making me wonder about the driver's state of mind. How often do train drivers have medical and psychological checks? And Farid was saying, English people see a fast train and immediately think about adding more bureaucracy into the world. Oh, yeah. Psychological and medical check. Just because she was on a train and she felt it was going too fast. Amazing. Someone is sending me a part of the Flat Earth debate where I would have appeared.
They're pushing everybody. I think I found the perfect question to ask SB. Totally outside the flat earth debate. SB, what do you think about horseshoe theory?
Well, horseshoe theory, that's that, that it's kind of the same as saying the left and right are both wings of one bird, right? You know?
Well, it's like saying the political spectrum is a circle. What do you think about it?
Well, to a degree, I believe that, that, you know, if you go too far in one direction, that you end up the same as your opponent, you know. Do you disagree with that, JF?
No, it's just that I got a flat earther to agree that if you go too far on one side, you end up on the other.
Oh boy, good days. Well, that was a clever, I don't remember this interaction. That was a clever way to approach the flat earth. I mean, circularity is basically what the flat earthers have difficulty with. To get them to admit that the political spectrum could be circular is a good start. What else do we have? We are headed toward the conclusion. Looney Bird from MSNBC says that POTUS press corps is biased. He's shaped the press corps, so the questions that are being asked and therefore the tone of the press conference is pro-Putin. Look, this is really the mainstream media losing its grip. It's not even pro-Putin. It's just that under Trump and under Caroline Leavitt, the press corps has been opened just slightly to include sometimes one streamer, sometimes one person that's outside of the mainstream media, and to be more inclusive of those right-wing broadcasting networks. Just this is enough to make them go crazy and think, oh, well, it has become pro-Putin. It's not even pro-Putin. It's just that you've been strangling control of White House correspondence for 100 years, maybe. Forever, for as far as anyone can remember. The mainstream media has been jealously gatekeeping control of White House correspondence, and now Trump has unleashed a little bit of fairness by giving a few right-wing outlets some access. Last news item before we leave the show, concerning the agricultural workers, the Thai female workers that are hired to go work in agriculture in Israel. So let's just picture this. They import. So you go into Thailand, the world center of prostitution, and you say, "I want to hire female agricultural worker." You're gonna have to move to Israel for a while to be a temporary worker. You're going to be under the control of a corporation. New Guy Prime says, Thai females sweating in the fields. Well, we got what happened. We found out what happens to these Thai workers. 100% rape! 100% per rape! 100% of the foreign agricultural workers were sexually assaulted by the Israeli people hiring them. And this is the interface between slavery, human trafficking, and immigration. But, I mean, you have to get 100% rape. I have never seen this. The only place I have seen 100% rape is in Rapeland. And Rapeland was a theoretical thought experiment. It was an idealized world. I've never claimed that Rapeland could be enacted in reality. But here we have it. 100% of the Thai agricultural workers. At this point, why are you even picking up the pears and the peaches? If it's going to be 100%, let's call it sex trafficking. by the Israelis. Much love. I'll see you all tomorrow. Oh, well, Doubting Thomas has a last attack on me on a tweet that I've made, I believe, 2 days ago. Jeff, I'm skeptical of your assessment of Gates' project. He's the largest farmland owner of the U.S. Is he really not going to filtrate out the nutrients before burying waste? So that's my commentary on Bill Gates. Bill Gates has a project to take human manure, and somehow it's an Indian in charge of this project. Wherever there is poo, you can look to the left, look to the right, you're gonna find one Indian. So Bill Gates wants to bury he digs these very, very deep digs. We're not talking about just a couple of feet. We're talking very deep. And he puts human manure down there with the idea that it's so deep that even the methane gas released by the human manure will not make it into the air. And therefore, that will reduce the global warming, that will reduce the greenhouse effect, because methane is a gas with very high greenhouse potential. And I've stated, that is ridiculous. Do that for 1,000 years and you're going to be losing massive amounts of nutrients, and you're trapping them at a place where they will not come back into the ecosystem. The only way they would come back is through volcanic activity, and good luck. Good luck. I mean, some places there will be no volcanic activity, so it's going to be trapped there forever. Now, your opposition is, Jeff, Bill Gates cannot be doing this in a way that will hurt the nutrients, because Bill Gates has an interest in keeping nutrients at the surface because he owns farmland. This is an invalid opposition to my point, because your opposition takes for granted that because Bill Gates has a ultimate interest, that he's going to be clever enough to realize it, that he's going to be clever enough to act in line with these interests, and that he has genuinely these interests. It's too many assumptions that you have to make. Sometimes people are stupid. Sometimes people are programmed on a crazy idea of going against nature, and they go at it. I mean, look at the vaccine. I mean, they won't let the evidence. The evidence was no problem to the vaccine propaganda. The propagandists, they really wanted the vaccine, and they were willing to make a defense of it in face of the facts, in face of the suffering families and the people hurt. So the same thing could happen with Bill Gates. He may not realize in time that his project is actually burying very important nutrients. I mean, manure is one of the most important pieces of the agricultural cycle. It's so important that any manure they have, they put back in the field. Can you imagine if not only you don't put it back in the field, but you're sending it to a place where it will never come back? That is absolutely grave.